Saturday, July 20th. Today, Britain has answered Adolf Hitler's warning to surrender with more vigorous defense preparations than ever. And a new commander of British Home Forces has been appointed, a fighting Irishman, Lieutenant General Sir Alan Brooke, who was the hero of the Battle of France. The German press re-echoes Hitler's warning to give up or face destruction. And new German air raids are reported on English and Scottish soil. But now the news direct from Europe, London, Berlin, and Rome. First, the report of Edward Murrow from the British capital. Go ahead, London.
This is London. And this island fortress has a new commander-in-chief. He is Lieutenant General Sir Alan Brooke, 57 years old, who has until now commanded the Southern Command. General Brooke replaces General Ironside, who has been promoted to the rank of Field Marshal. The announcement does not make clear the nature of General Ironside's duties, but it is said that he will remain on the active list and will be available either in an advisory capacity or in command. Lord Gort, who commanded the DEF in France, has been appointed Inspector General to the forces for training. The explanation for the promotion of General Ironside out of his command is that it was considered essential to place the command of the home forces in the hands of a man who had had immediate experience of command in France and Belgium. The new commander-in-chief comes from Northern Ireland, commanded the 2nd Corps of the DEF in France, and made his military reputation through his all-round knowledge of gunnery and mechanization. He is credited with the invention during the last war of the so-called barrage map, which came into common use for the direction of artillery barrage fire. Reports from Bucharest speak of a coming clash between Germany and Russia and the concentration of large numbers of German and Russian troops along the length of the common Polish frontier. Despite these reports and rumors from the Balkans and the reports that Stalin's fleet is to hold extensive maneuvers in the Baltic and the Black Sea, the best opinion in London is that none of these moves indicate any real change in Russian-German relations. Russian sources, both here and in Moscow, complain that Britain did not consult the Soviet Union before deciding to close the Burma Road. The fact is that, in his very careful statement, did not say that either the United States or Russia had been consulted. What he did say was that agreement had been reached after full consideration of the attitude of the United States and Russia. Herr Hitler's lengthy oration yesterday provides the subject matter for most of today's editorials. Some surprise is expressed that he is allowing himself the luxury of a conscience, that he still suffers from an itch to justify his ways, that he desires not only to be clever but righteous, not only strong but good. He gave Britain a choice between perishing by the sword or perishing by the peace terms. Now, the Daily Telegraph sums up the speech by saying, "We are, in effect, to stand and deliver. Our blood be on our own heads. He has nothing to offer ourselves or anyone else but a Gestapo millennium." It is recognized here that the speech was made for home consumption and in an effort to impress the peoples of the continent. There is no evidence that it impressed anyone in Britain. Now, there have been a few small strikes in Britain during recent weeks, but as from today, both strikes and lockouts are banned under a new order issued by the Minister of Labor. Disputes must be reported to the minister, who will refer the matter to arbitration. The findings of the arbitration tribunal will be binding on all parties. One result of this new decree is likely to be that the banks and insurance companies, the only great commercial organizations to stand out against trade unionism, will be forced to recognize organized labor. Trade union membership now totals about 5 million, and this new decree is expected to increase the membership to 7.5 million within a year. This morning's official communique reports German bombs on Scotland and southeast and southwest England last night. Two German aircraft were shot down. Not much damage was done, and casualties were few. Two houses were destroyed in southeast England, and a school building in northeast Scotland was badly damaged by three bombs. These reports of night bombings are terse and uninformative. They begin to read like old weather forecasts. Lists issued by the War Office show that from May 24th until last Wednesday, the number of German Air Force prisoners in British hands has increased by 480. This list shows that the German air crews are not the mere babies that you have been reading about. One is a boy of 17, and five are only 18. But the average age is around 23, which seems to indicate that the age range of German air crews is not very different from that of the British. There are many refugees in Britain these days, but one of the last to arrive is that colorful, picturesque, and almost medieval character who once had his own private army in Austria when he was a good friend of Signor Mussolini. Prince Ernst Rudinger von Starnberg is now in England. I return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. Here is a press association dispatch from Havana, Cuba. Secretary of State Cordell Hull and members of the United States delegation to the Inter-American Conference are due to arrive at Havana in another hour on the line of Florida, which left Miami last night. We've heard from London, and now we take you to the German capital for the latest news reported from that point by Edwin Hartridge. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. The German peace gauntlet has been flung at the feet of Winston Churchill and the British people. And now Berlin is sitting back waiting for the answer. Herr Hitler's peace offer makes pleasant reading to the Germans this morning. This is reflected in all the newspapers. For instance, here are a few of the editorial comments. The Volksscher Beobachter writes, quote, while we are in a fever of heat, longing for the hour of final settlement, the Fuhrer has paused in the midst of his victorious drive, and thinking of the well-being of the whole white race, he is now addressing a last appeal to the conscience and common sense of the world. From the Frankfurter Mittag has this editorial headline, quote, the last appeal, Adolf Hitler the victor warns the enemy of Europe. And then the local Anzeiger adds its say, quote, world history is at a crucial stage. There will be no escape for England. It is up to her to decide, but the last chance has been given her. Germany is behind the leader to the last man, ready for peace, as well as for the last battle, which will be a crushing defeat for England. Herr Hitler's Reichstag speech yesterday afternoon has a deep appeal to the Germans. It has given them the opportunity to say, in effect, well, we gave England a chance to make peace, so if the war continues, it is then their own fault. Anyway, that is what we feel is the local reaction here. And yesterday, Herr Hitler dug deep into German military history to bring up a new title for Hermann Göring, the builder and commander-in-chief of the German Air Force. The new title of Reichsmarschall is somewhat similar to that given to Prince Eugene, one of the great German strategists in the 17th century. Prince Eugene was named General Field Marshal of the Reich for his services in the field. There is no comparable title, for instance, in the American military hierarchy to Reichsmarschall, nor is to be found elsewhere in Europe. But the new honors of Reichsmarschall Göring seem to meet with the popular approval of the Berliners. I stood on the corner of the Unter den Linden yesterday, as Herr Hitler and all the important generals and top-ranking government ministers drove past on the return from the Reichstag. There was a very personal and informal quality in the cheers and greetings given Reichsmarschall Göring as he drove past. At some points, the spectators began to chant in unison, we congratulate you, Uncle Hermann, we congratulate you. Uncle Hermann is the pet name the Germans have for the Reichsmarschall. And Hermann Göring responded with a grin from ear to ear as he waved instead of giving the National Socialist salute to the street crowds. The promotion of 12 generals to the rank of Marshals of Germany was another surprise. It recalls Napoleon and his empire when all the successful generals were named Marshals of France. Napoleon was the author of that immortal cliché, every private carries a Marshal's baton in his knapsack. And this seems to have been adopted by the Germans. And now that the celebrations and promotions have been climaxed with this peace offer of Herr Hitler, the next thing on the calendar seems to be the start of the Blitzkrieg against England. That is, provided that Winston Churchill and his government refuse to consider the offer of a German peace. But in this event, when Herr Hitler will say the word go, is at this moment merely a matter of speculation. Then a few minutes ago at the Foreign Office press conference, the spokesman had an answer to the critical British radio and press reaction to Herr Hitler's address. That is not the real reaction of the English people, he said, but it is only the reaction of the government and the warmongers. Then the Foreign Office spokesman added that the German government regarded it as important that the British were so fast in supplying this criticism, the implication being, it would appear, that such criticism was prepared in advance. Also, the British radio comments of Herr Hitler's speech were further described as being, quote, insolent, unquote. The military communique has just been given out, and this high command reports that yesterday German planes conducted bombing raids over southern England and Scotland. The report claims that power plants, supply depots, harbors, and anti-aircraft batteries and English airports were bombed successfully. This is Edwin Hartrich. I return you now to Columbia in New York.
This is New York, and here is a United Press dispatch from the Egyptian-Libyan frontier by courier to Cairo. Crack mechanized British cavalry knocked out 11 Italian tanks at dawn the other day as they tried to break through a ring of fire to take food, water, ammunition, and supplies to 1,000 Italians besieged in wrecked Fort Capuzzo. Now the news from the Italian capital reported by Cecil Brown. Go ahead, Rome.
This is Rome. The Italian High Command announced today the loss of the first Italian cruiser. She was the 5,000-ton Bartolomeo Corleone and carried a crew of more than 500. The ship was accompanied by another light cruiser when a British flotilla was sighted off the Greek island of Crete. The war communique says the British force consisted of two 7,000-ton cruisers with heavier armor and escorted by four British destroyers. The two Italian cruisers opened fire. In the course of the three-hour battle, the Bartolomeo Corleone was hit and went to the bottom. The British have announced they picked up about 250 of the survivors. Italian air formations overtook the British naval forces. The Italian High Command says several hits were scored on the British destroyers and reports that one British ship was set afire and sunk. With Hitler's speech out of the way, the Axis offensive against England and the British Empire appears ready to burst. The Rome newspaper, Popolo di Roma, in a dispatch from Berlin, fixes the time and the result this way. It says, quote, "The effort will start immediately. It will be formidable, inexorable, and decisive," unquote. Some observers here expect that at the same time, a large-scale action is being prepared in Africa. Hitler's references to Mussolini in Italy were, of course, warmly welcomed here. The Rome newspaper Messaggero calls it a great discord and a solemn consecration of the German victory. But the Popolo di Roma interprets it in this headline, quote, "The Axis powers decide to prosecute the victory against the common enemy." The Popolo di Roma, in its story from Berlin, said the speech was proof of Hitler's high moral and political conscience. It was, the paper says, a final and definite appeal to reason. Prime Minister Chamberlain is conferring with von Ribbentrop today in Berlin. The indications here are that they are not only talking about the future course of the war, but what to do about France. German troops are occupying French territory, and virtually all control of France is now vested in the Nazi authorities. It is supposed here that China is seeking an arrangement with Berlin regarding the direction of French affairs. That means the Axis partners are going to reach an understanding about the division of responsibility for the future fate of France. An important article on relations with Yugoslavia appeared today in the well-informed review Relazioni Internazionali. The review says most of the Balkan countries are orienting their policy to the changed events. The exception is Yugoslavia. The Yugoslavia press, says the fascist review, is still too much of a slave to the policy of the Western democracy. The review says it would be advisable for Yugoslavia to realize the new European order. Then the periodical offers this attitude. Quote, "In such a zone, the prevalence of ideas or a mentality that is now exhausted," unquote. President Roosevelt's speech accepting the Democratic nomination is given only two paragraphs in the papers here. No mention is made of his attack on the dictatorships. Fascist circles seem convinced that the United States will not intervene in this war. And, from their point of view, whatever else America does in the way of speeches or furnishing supplies, only intervention might change the course of the war. This is Cecil Brown in Rome, returning you to Columbia in New York.
Such is the news from Europe. Here is the latest political news in the United States. Secretary of Agriculture Wallace is reported preparing to resign his cabinet post to campaign for the Democratic ticket. And thus we bring to a close this morning report of national and international developments, reported from London by Edward R. Murrow, from Berlin by Edwin Hartridge, and from Rome by Cecil Brown. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.